Watching the nightly news is a ritual in countless American homes, each viewer tuning into the station they trust the most. But if our guest this hour is right, all TV news should be watched with a handful of salt and a critical eye. Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, keeping you company this week for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're joined by Steve Powers. He's a journalist with more than 45 years of experience in radio and TV news, including as a newscaster for the New York Times Radio Network and anchor reporter for Fox Television News. He's the co-author with Neil Postman of the book, How to Watch the TV News. Well, how much stock do you put in TV news shows? Are you loyal to a particular network or show, and why? Are you worried about the forces that influence the news? And what are you teaching your kids about being a good news consumer? I hope you'll call us this morning with your take at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Steve Powers, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here, Veronica.
Well, you've seen the inside of the TV news industry. You were an anchor reporter on Fox TV News. Can you tell us, in a nutshell, what concerns you with the way TV news works?
Sure. Basically, it's that news is supposed to be presented to the public, giving them information they need to know to live their lives in a constructive way. But what it really is a commercial entity. It's a commercial endeavor aimed at hooking viewers to watch what they call TV news in order to sell them products via commercials.
So what about the content of the newscast? Surely the people who are putting them out care at least a little about what they're putting out there and what the American public or the people that are watching get out of the show.
Sure. The fact is that you do get a lot of valuable information from TV news, but what you have to do when you're waiting to get that important information is to view what you're seeing with skepticism, because you are being manipulated by the producers of the show, who are presenting a lot of stuff, if you will, I'm not even going to call it news, in order to hook you so that you will wait through to the commercials so that you can buy some products.
So are you saying the producers and maybe the news directors, they're not thinking about what is the most important item of the day that the viewers need to know? They're thinking about what's going to keep them watching, and those
right.
Those things aren't necessarily one and the same.
That's right. They're figuring out what's going to hook this audience to stay through to the bitter end. That's why you see so many teases on TV news. You know, you'll sit there and you'll say, tornado coming into the area, more on that after this. And you're saying, hey, wait a minute, let me have that information right now. I don't want to wait through the commercial until I get that information. And they're constantly teasing you in order for you to hang in there and watch their commercials.
These are shows that are for profit, though. I mean, I don't think many people have illusions about that unless you're watching public broadcasting. I mean, what's wrong with trying to make sure your listeners keep watching? It is a business.
Well, because the idea that it is a business, while true, there's a factor that's more important than that, and that is that the broadcasters are supposed to be operating these TV stations in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. That's the government gives these stations licenses, and the stations are supposed to be giving the public back information in the form of news. And what's happened is the broadcasters more and more have been deregulated, and they don't have responsibility, or they feel they don't have responsibility, to give the public anything other than sell them goods via commercials.
And I guess it's a case of the public necessarily not knowing or wanting what's best for them. They might rather keep watching a piece about a water skating parakeet than a piece about the war in Iraq.
Sure. But that is, again, the responsibility of journalists is to alert people as to what they need to know. Just as I'm sure if you went to a doctor, you wouldn't want the doctor to say, hey, you look wonderful, you know, come back in a year, you know, or whatever. You want the truth from the doctor. You need that information in order to live and in order to live well. And I contend it's the same thing as far as news. People need information in order to live, in order to constructively live their life. Listen, and nowadays with fast-moving events, you need to know what's going on economically and every other which way in your in your community in order to survive.
Well, I guess the trick here is that we need to know, but we don't know what we need to know. And someone, there are gatekeepers there who need to make those decisions for us. And you're saying we need to be able to trust them, I guess, but we can't.
Yeah, and even beyond that, because things, the game has changed. You're absolutely right. There are gatekeepers who are supposed to be vetting the news. They're supposed to look at the stories and say, this story should be on the news, and here's how this story should be presented to maximize the truth. But what's happening lately is because of the growth of the Internet, just about anybody can go on the Internet and present information and maybe even disguise it as news, and there are fewer and fewer gatekeepers for all of these various outlets that you have on the Internet. So I think the public is somewhat confused to on a lot of the information that they get, and as a result, don't always walk away with a true picture of what's going on.
Well, you make a really strong statement at the beginning of your book, right up front. I want to read a quote from that preface that says, "Anyone who is not an avid reader of newspapers, magazines, and books is by definition unprepared to watch TV news shows and always will be." That's a strong statement. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
The reason we put that in How to Watch TV News is because when people look at a story, let's say they're exposed to a story. If it's really a long story on the nightly news, it's a minute and a half. That would be really long. Probably most stories are, 30 seconds, 20 seconds, 40 seconds. So let's say a complicated story comes on the air and it's a minute and a half long. I mean, think of events in your own life. Do you think you can explain something with nuance and some sort of a context in a minute and a half, and then they include an actuality, a sound bite or a little video of somebody that usually lasts about 9-10 seconds. So this expert is telling you what he or she needs to tell you in 10 seconds, and they're telling you all of the, giving you a story in 90 seconds. And we contend that it's impossible for anybody to walk away with information, knowledge about an event in 90 seconds. You can have a piece of it, some of it, and that's why you need to read books, listen to NPR radio, read more newspapers, see movies, whatever, and keep your eyes open as a citizen as you walk down the street.
Well, what you're talking about sounds like an ideal situation. It would be great if everyone had the time to do that, but not everyone does. What's wrong with getting a minute and a half versus nothing?
Well, it's okay, but that's what you got. But that's like saying people don't have time to eat healthy. Healthfully. So they grab fast food, and if that's okay, they'll pay the price for doing that constantly. But those who do pay attention to what they ingest, and in this form it's an ingestion of news and information, will do better than those who don't pay attention to it and just grab it on the run.
Can you tell us a story or two that kind of illustrate the point of what you're talking about how the content of TV news isn't what it should be? Your book is full of stories. Can you tell us one or two?
I'm not sure specifically what kind of stories. I've lived through all of it, so that's... But, for example, there was an incident where I was an anchor reporter over at Metro Media, and then it was sold to Fox. And I was choppered into a story in upstate New York, and I jumped out of the chopper once it landed and ran to this house where there had been a crime, a murder. And I had maybe 35, 45 seconds to talk to an officer who was on the scene. I literally had to run back because the cameraman had set up the camera near the helicopter. I went on the air and barely knew what I was talking about, before I was in the chopper and heading back to the city again. Now, that was an incident that happened to me, and I will tell you that this is happening more and more to more reporters, especially with the advent of cable television, which has to fill 24 hours. So reporters are dashing about not only the community but around the world, and literally dropping out of the sky. They are talking to producers who are on the ground who have information for them. They go on the air, and bam, they may go on the air every hour on the hour, because if it's an important story, that's what they'll have to do. And if you analyze it, if someone's on the air and then there's an event taking place some distance away, they don't have time to be dashing back and forth and actually reporting the news. So what these star reporters are, as we call them in How to Watch TV News, Bigfoot reporters, because that's what they're called, do is they drop into an area, the producers set them up with a dramatic background. Perhaps there's a fire in California behind, over their shoulder, you know, or wherever, or floods in the Midwest. And they go on the air, and the producer tells them what's going on, and these reporters are not really reporting. What they're doing is presenting, if you will, the information that they have secondhand to the audience. That's an example of the way television news works.
And you also make the point that people are not so aware that these are shows in a literal sense, that everything has been contrived to make it as entertaining as possible, from the really attractive looking family, the anchors, you call them, they're sort of grouped as families, to the music, to the set. You say this is a show, and people need to be aware.
Absolutely.
Of that.
Well, I mean, the perfect example, which we talk about in the book, is Katie Couric taking over the CBS Evening News, and that newscast went over had an enormous makeover because Dan Rather had been on the set, so they brought in this group of experts. I mean, they're terrific people whose job it was to sweep away Dan Rather and characterize the program. And there's an account in How to Watch TV News from the Boston Globe reporting the way the designers came in and asked the CBS executives what they wanted, and the executives and this is the way the mind works, and this is how the audience is viewing this. They wanted a classy, elegant, and timeless, these are the phrases they used, elements for Katie Couric on the set. So they went out and built a whole set, a very expensive set, and they started to try to figure out how do we get something that looks expensive, classy. And they came up with the ideas that architecture, cars, jewelry, those things are classy and expensive. And they say that the common theme was a certain shininess of lighting. Lights glint off diamonds and chrome. So they made light glint off the CBS logo letters and curves. And we'll get into that word curves because now we have a female anchor. To represent Couric, and then she decided that the old theme music had to go, so they brought in an Academy Award winning composer, James Horner, who'd written songs and scores for 100 movies, including the Titanic, by the way. And he came in and wrote new music, 10 seconds of imagery. So that's just a brief example of how the show quality, the showbiz quality. Even when you start to watch a newscast, you hear the musical theme comes up, and if you just stop right there and ask yourself, what has this got to do with information that I need to know for the day, you'll probably walk away with probably not much. But the music is there to set you up that you're going to hear something important that has gravitas, and the people who are about to show you the news and know what they're talking about. And then you see this set with the authoritarian desk, the people sitting behind it, costumed, if you will, in tailored outfits, men and women, and then as we point out, the family concept of them trying to get you to be part of a family, with the male and the female anchors and the kid joking around weather person. The sports guy who's perennially a teenager, you know, rooting for his team, and so on and so forth. So it's a show, yeah.
So I listened to you talk, and it's interesting because, you know, clearly you've described the elements of a news show as something that has a lot of showmanship, a lot of attention, sort of like the way you might produce a Hollywood movie. But on the other hand, you know, all of this stuff, it sort of makes the audience go, okay, I'm about to watch something important. I'm going to sit back and pay attention. Rather, if you just had, you know, the lights come on and there's a guy sitting at the desk, he's kind of frumpily dressed and he just launches into the news. I don't know. People tend to sort of feel like the presentation matters. And if it looks important and expensive, maybe they'll pay more attention.
Well, just because something looks important, I contend, doesn't make it important. So I'm not saying that you have to have somebody, you know, shabbily dressed with a cardboard card table in front of him or her reading the news.
I guess I'm wondering what the alternative would be then. If it's not the slickly produced thing, what to you would be an honest way to do a newscast?
What it is the emphasis. You see, it's not so much that they're using these techniques of music and stagecraft to put on the newscast. It's that the emphasis becomes that, that the stagecraft takes over for the news, and pretty soon you have a situation where the news that they're teasing is more of a sensational nature than it is of substance. And what happens is the form takes over from the substance. So I'm not saying that you can't have something pleasant to look at or pleasant people to look at, but on the other hand, you don't need all of these bells and whistles and coming at you in order to be impressed that what you're about to hear is important when, and this is the real key here, when a lot of what you're about to see is not important. One of your local stations, I just checked on their homepage in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the stories that they're listing on their homepage. Two babies dead. Man pleads not guilty. Man sought after intentionally ramming vehicles. Chicago man arrested after pursuit crash. Favre's future new developments. Brett Favre.
So a lot of crime, some sports.
High-speed motorcycle races. Zimmerman murder case, 911 call. I'm just reading them down the line. I'm not selecting which ones I'm reading and which ones I'm not. This is the list that they place on their website as the important stories of the day. Let me just say, I rest my case.
Well, that's an interesting point there. So you're saying those aren't necessarily important things of the day. Those are just the things that you know, maybe people are going to be interested in because they have a prurient interest.
In a way, yeah. You know, as the expression goes, if it bleeds, it leads. And the reason is that people like the blood and guts story, and crime is attractive, and celebrity is attractive. Let's not leave out the you know, Paris Hilton and the Wren and Anna Nicole Smith, as you remember back when she died. That was the TV news went crazy. I mean, for her a week, her death consumed over 20% of the cable airtime. That's a fifth of cable airtime for the week of her death was about her story, and then for 2 days, 50% of the news availability on cable, 50% was on about the Anna Nicole Smith case. Was it interesting? Sure. Was it unfortunate that she died and so on? And then, of course, all of the information about who was the father of her child and so on and so forth. I understand. But important, need to know, taking that amount of time to tell the public what they need to do? I don't think so.
We're talking this hour with Steve Powers. He is an Emmy Award-winning journalist, former anchor reporter for Fox Television News, and co-author of the book, How to Watch TV News. We'll be back with him and taking your phone calls after a quick break. Love to know how much trust you put in TV news shows, and are you worried about the forces that influence the news? Give us a call with your take at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickard back with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll stay with us next hour as our guest worries about the state of boyhood in America. She says that while the focus on the development and advancement of girls has skyrocketed, society has forgotten and ignored the needs of boys. That's coming up after 10 o'clock. We're talking this hour with Steve Powers, an Emmy Award-winning journalist, former anchor reporter for Fox Television News, and co-author of the book How to Watch TV News. And Steve Powers, we're going to go ahead and take a phone call now. We've got Dave on the line from Menominee. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Scott McClellan was on Hardball this past week, and he admitted that the White House passes on talking points to Fox News for their reporters to use as a propaganda-type tool, and I wanted to get your guests' thoughts on that.
All right, thank you. Steve Powers? Steve, are you there?
I am. First of all, I saw that item, and I don't think it shocked anybody, because anybody who watches Fox News and understands how Rupert Murdoch works understands that it is a cudgel. It's used as a political force, although there's a constant debate, in the media itself as to whether Fox News is slanted or not. From my point of view, you're asking me my specific opinion. It absolutely is slanted. One of the problems that's happening right now is Fox News has been enormously successful as far as attracting an audience, and news managers are understanding that people seem to want to hear their own opinion reflected back at them, you know, through the tube. As a result, again, my opinion, MSNBC seems to be pulsing the other way in order to attract the other audience, the Obama audience. And they seem to be tilting in that direction in order to attract an audience from that side. So I don't think this is a healthy development, and I think exactly what you brought to bear, this story, this is the kind of information that we want out. In other words, when we wrote How to Watch TV News, what we're trying to do is alert the public to what they're actually watching. If the public actually sees that there are talking points on the Fox News network, that's provided by the White House, then they become more knowledgeable when these commentators start talking about and constantly supporting the administration. Now you understand why.
Do you think that most people are aware of political bias in the various news networks?
Probably not, because nor maybe should they be. I mean, it's the average person is too busy earning a living and bringing up a family, bringing up kids, dealing with their personal problems to be a media analyst. You know, we all know a little bit about a little bit, but I think it's very difficult for the public, and I think that's why we have to call attention to these things to alert them.
Let's go on and take a call from Victor in Oconomowoc. Hello, Victor, you're up.
Hi, how are you folks doing today?
Pretty good. How about you?
Fine, thanks. My observation is that the media is really the only public sector, private sector institution that has a constitutional right imbued to it. It's got to make money, but it's also got to serve the interest of the First Amendment, freedom of the press. On the local level, the only thing that news really reports accurately is the weather, sports, and the traffic. Other than that, the media just does not allow one to discuss complex issues in 90-second blurbs. So you get which restaurant is poisoning you, and if it bleeds, it leads. What about TIF financing? What about developments that are happening in the local government? These aren't sexy. These aren't very flashy. I think there's an inverse relationship between the flashy news and the important news. If it's flashy, it's not important. You want to get a good discussion of what's going on, turn on to PBS, listen to NPR. Maybe the Shepherd Express and the Isthmus get readers because they are the alternative news, but they end up actually reporting the good local news, and people should be paying attention to these things because, quite frankly, yes, we're representative democracy, but if you don't take the time to think about issues and then vote accordingly, well, you kind of end up with the government you deserve. And I'll take my response off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot, Victor. Steve Powers?
Well, I mean, I can't find any fault with what he's saying. What he's saying is true, and I think we all, you know, have to keep our eyes open and know what's going on around us. The only thing I would point out is that the First Amendment and the freedom of speech, and of course newspapers operate differently than the media, which and the electronic media, and especially television news, which is what we wrote about, and that is because they are supposed to be overseen by the FCC, by the government, and broadcasters do owe the public something. They give their loaned licenses, and they are supposed to give the public back, if you will, in return for them to be able to use the airwaves. So newspapers are different. They are privately owned, and they can just about do and write what they want, and if they want to write one man's opinion, they do. And all you have to do is go back to Rupert Murdoch and look at what he does at the New York Post and what have you here in New York and see how he handles the news. So they are two different things, but absolutely, the public has to be aware of what they're ingesting.
And you have a suggestion. You have tips in the back of your book about how to watch TV news. One of the things you suggest is reducing the amount of TV news we watch by a third.
Sure. Because first of all, if you watch enough TV news, you have a world view that's just warped, and you're constantly bombarded with this death and that violence and so on and so forth. And you think after watching enough of this stuff that this is how the world functions on a daily basis, and it really doesn't. The other thing is, if you're not watching a lot of TV news, then you're hopefully reading newspapers, books, listening to radio, doing a lot of things where you can get more information and put all of this news business into some sort of a context. If you just sit in front of a TV set and just watch the news, the world is a frightening. You don't want to move. And by the way, I would call attention to the fact that people who are very conscious of what their children watch will often sit there, and the kids will join them and watch the news. And the news is probably the most violent thing on television. And the parents will sit there and let the kids watch that and then go on their merry way without explaining to the children what the context of the news is. So you have to be very careful with this stuff. It can be dangerous to you.
What's your take on long-format TV news, something like 60 Minutes?
Well, it's interesting because 60 Minutes, which is, I think, basically a terrific show, might have been partially responsible for the condition that we're in, and I'll explain it to you. There was a time when they had the three basic networks, CBS, NBC, and I remember even before ABC was a respectable network, but it was CBS, NBC, and ABC. Again, we had these gatekeepers who watched what kind of news went on the air and how it was presented, and there was a serious tone to it. Then, at that time, the newscasts on television were not making money, and the various networks and local stations put them on as a public service. And if you recall, they even called the CBS network the Tiffany Network because they had people like Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite and so on. But then what happened was programs like 60 Minutes, which you just mentioned, started to make money. And the news managers and station managers and network producers said, hey, we don't have to lose money putting on the news. We can make money. Okay? How do you make money putting on news? Well, you attract a large viewership, and you attract the demographics, the people that advertisers want to attract, and that's usually people between 18 and 49. How do you attract those people? Well, the answer starts coming down. The easy way is with sensationalism and the kind of news and pictures that people are attracted to. A fire with the flames licking out of the window and heavy smoke billowing out. Maybe no one was hurt. Maybe this community was barely affected by it, but it's a heck of a picture. pictures of bodies, pictures of violence, and so on. And then you had a change in TV news and how it was presented towards the commercial realm, and that's where we are today.
But aren't we really talking about a deeper problem here than just with the news? I mean, you're talking about something, a vein for violence that runs really deep in our culture from, you know, the movies we watch. We have a hunger for that as well. Is it maybe, you know, something that can't be addressed just in looking at the news?
Yeah, I mean, news is part of the picture. Everything is everything. Everything is a component of everything else. And TV news is just one part of the jigsaw puzzle.
Let's go back to the lines now. We've got John on hold from Westby. Hi, John. You're on the air. John, are you there? Oh, tragic. We just lost him right when it was his turn. Let's go to Tim in Milwaukee. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. I was curious to get your guest's thoughts on the forthcoming move to digital television and what that will do in terms of cable news. It seems to me the lawmakers saw, and maybe I'm being cynical about it, but I think they saw an opportunity to get more people to force their hand to watch cable news, and I think the cable news is the real problem with our society, the 24/7, you know, exactly what your guest was saying about all the imagery, and, you know, forcing the end of the public airways and making everybody then switch to, you know, the digital television, I think is just a, I don't know. I don't know enough about it, but I know it's coming, and I think a lot of people aren't even aware of it. So if I could get his thoughts on that, that would be great.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks.
Steve. There's a couple of thoughts. One is that I don't agree with your assessment that it's geared toward people pushing people to watch the 24-hour cable news operations for a couple of but there are dangers in this, if you will, because people who do control the cable news also control, don't forget, the channels that you watch and, as a result, what you are watching. And now it's estimated there are about 5 large corporations in this country that control over 90% of the television, cable television, and regular TV that you watch. 5 corporations. So that in itself is frightening. And these corporations will have more and more power in the way of deciding what channels you'll watch and what you won't watch, because that they control that too. But I think what we're going to see with digital is an explosion, because there is a great commercial benefit to digital that hasn't been realized yet, and that is a lot of these single stations in your market that carry the news at whatever time, 5, 6 o'clock, are going to be split. And all of a sudden, some of these local stations may carry more local news, if you will, and more entertainment, because you're going to have more than one station, more than one analog station can be split for digital. So it's a very complicated process. I'll be honest with you, I don't know how it's going to shake out, but we're going to have a lot more video being waved in front of us. I don't think the quality is going to get much better, but you're going to have a lot more video.
We're talking TV news this hour with Steve Powers, who's an Emmy Award-winning journalist, former anchor reporter for Fox Television News, and co-author of the book How to Watch TV News. Hopefully taking your calls as well this morning. What are you teaching your kids about being a good news consumer? Do you let them watch the nightly news with you? And are you worried about the forces that influence the news? Hope you'll join us this morning with your call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Veronica Rickert with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a lot to come today here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 12:30, join us for Chapter a Day as Jim Fleming reads from The Appeal by John Grisham. This hour, we're taking a look at TV news with the author of How to Watch TV News, Steve Powers, who's an Emmy Award-winning journalist, a former anchor reporter for Fox TV News as well, among other credentials.
Every time. I must say that I was I joined the station when it was owned by Metro Media, and Rupert Murdoch bought the station and turned it into Fox News after I was there, and I subsequently left.
So that's when you're not so proud of?
No, not working for Rupert Murdoch.
Okay, let's go on and take a call from Donna in Milwaukee. Hi, Donna, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Earlier on, the guest said that originally TV stations had nonprofit half hour of news, and he made it sound like it was just gratis.
So a little just clarification gratis on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm afraid I didn't say that.
No. I mean, this is how I heard it, but let me finish. What I do understand, though, is that it was law that they had to have a half hour or so of nonprofit news, and then the law was changed. And again, I'm not sure on all my facts, but I believe it was during the Reagan administration that they were then allowed to have, a profitable news hour. So that's just my comment. It was a law that was reverse changed.
Well, all right, we've got to just clarify something. I didn't indicate that it was a nonprofit. They were trying to make money. They had commercials on it, but news basically as an operation, in other words, for a network that was spending millions and millions of dollars, they did not make money on the news because it cost a lot to produce, and they did have commercials. So it wasn't a non-commercial endeavor. But what happened is once it started to make money, that's when the orientation started to the more sensational. As far as the Reagan administration, you're absolutely right. There was a deregulation of the media that started then, and then you had this huge consolidation. That's when all of these big companies started to buy up other media outlets, where you have this huge control of these five huge corporations controlling the media. So, the deregulation continues to this day.
Thank you for that call. And going now to Lori in Oconomowoc. Hi, Lori. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning. I really like this topic. One of the biggest messages we're sending in colleges today is that television is about entertainment and advertising, period, because it's so heavily censored and filtered, and you don't have exposure to a full picture like Democracy Now!, which gives the people the whole news. And one alternative is that people are turning off their television sets and going to the Internet, which I think is what's going to happen in the future anyway. So people can go to the Internet and watch news from various sources, from various parts of the world, and get a better picture of really what's going on. And I'll take my comments off of it.
Okay, thanks, Lori.
You're right on the money. There was a report from the Pew Internet and American Life Project that showed that researchers said that 39% of American adults are using the web to access original source material from the presidential campaign, such as videos of the debates and so on and so forth, speeches. So people are trying to get the information less filtered by the TV networks and what have you. And there's an explosion on the Internet, I'm sure. I know I use them, and I suspect just about everybody. When you hear about a news story, you don't wait until, the big newscast of the day. What you do is probably go over to the Internet and try to get the information firsthand. You might even watch through YouTube or one of the other sources the video. And that is the revolution. The Internet revolution is underway. And I agree with the caller that the TV as we know it is on its way out.
Well, with sources of new media right now, like the Internet, is it possible that that could put pressure on the big news shows in a good way and force maybe journalists to start covering the news differently? I mean, you could cover the news that, might be a little more important, but make it interesting. I mean, they're journalists in a way. Part of their job is to make the news interesting no matter what it is, and maybe we could see a turn in that direction.
Yeah, Veronica, it's complicated in the sense that these news managers are faced with this. Their audience is diminishing. For example, on the major network newscast that go across the country in many places at 6:30 with NBC, ABC, and CBS, the audience where it was is now down to about 22 million, 25 million, where it used to be double that. The the audience is shrinking. And by the way, the demographics on that audience are 60 years and older watching the network newscasts at 6:30. So the audience is older. The audience is being diminished. And the news managers are saying, what are we going to do about this? Now, you came up with a possible solution, and that is you put on a really strong news program and attract people over there. Or, and this seems to be happening more, let's put on programs that seem to attract viewers to TV, and that goes back to the celebrity kind of TV reporting mixed in with important news. So I'm not saying there's nothing to be gained out of television news. No, you can get information. But the goal of the news managers is to attract you to the advertising, and they do that with these celebrity and sensational stories.
Did you just say that the median age for TV news shows was 60?
60 for the network news shows.
No, that doesn't seem like the audience for segments on pole dancing and murders. It seems like those would be viewers who wanted a little more substance. I don't know.
You mean the people who are watching the news?
Yeah, exactly. When you talk about there being more sensational content like celebrities and sex and scandals.
No, what I'm saying is the major networks are have a dilemma because their audience is getting older. And their audience is leaving them, and they're trying to figure out how to attract a younger audience and more people. And that's, by the way, one of the reasons you saw Katie Couric take over for the CBS News. That was not just a mistake on the part of CBS. CBS was trying to attract a younger viewer, thinking that Katie Couric would attract younger viewers. And she had an element of glamour about her, and that's why she's there. I don't believe that CBS reached out for the best journalist in the nation to attract an audience. So they're trying to get a large number of people to watch them.
So I guess when we're talking about the content that goes into the news right now, and you're saying it's a lot of salacious stuff, who is that intended for? Is that intended for the audience that they're trying to lure back, or is that intended for the 60-year-olds?
Well, it's certainly not intended for the 60-year-olds because the 60-year-olds are less interested in the celebrity kind of news and probably don't even know who most of the celebrities are, and that's probably to their credit that they don't. They're trying to survive in a commercial world. The push and pull is that what they're trying to do is make money for their corporations, and these are big operations. The television network operations, and their goal of the television operation is to make money. They view themselves as business entities, and the pull is a way to the public that needs information in order to live constructive lives, and that's the difference. You have the commercial versus the substance, if you will. And as I say, this goes on in society in many different ways.
Let's go back to the phones and grab a call from Martha in Menominee. Hi, Martha.
Hi there. Great show. See, I don't ever watch TV news. My kids don't watch it. We don't even really use the TV. It's unplugged. We get a lot of our information all over the Internet and from publications, independent publications like the Rock Creek Free Press, small newspapers like that. And this all started back when I was appalled at the TV news coverage of 9/11 and the distinct bias that I began to see over the years against the Arabic Muslim world. I have a lot of friends who are Arabic speaking, and the final straw for me was the misquote from the Iranian president that we saw splattered all over the TV. And this failure of information being put out there about how this is being used to sort of galvanize our country against the Arab world. And I wonder if your guest could speak about how TV news is used, getting beyond the corporate profit motive, but how it's used, I'm not going to say brainwashing, even though I just said it, but if he could speak about how there's a bigger picture here about how this is being used to galvanize our country into supporting certain issues.
Mm. Thanks, Martha.
Yeah, well, I do not believe that there's a cabal, if you will, where these people sit around somewhere and say let's attack the Arabs or the Jews or the this or the that. I believe that the television news operates on these broad symbols, if you will, and one of the broad symbols after 9/11 was the fact that many of the assassins, if you will, were from Saudi Arabia. And then if you're really simplistic, you expand that into Arabs and so on and so forth, and then you have people who are prone to discriminate, and they're off and running. That's nothing new, but I don't believe that there is a TV news office, if you will, of projecting this kind of bias. I don't think so.
On we go to Daryl calling from Ixonia.
How you doing?
Hey, Daryl, welcome.
Yeah, I agree totally that the news is, you get distracted by the fluff, and it, just a good example would be years ago when everybody was distracted with Bill Clinton and Monica, while on the other side of the world, people were figuring out how to fly an airplane into a building, and everybody's all worried, oh, what's Bill? Who's seen his donkey? You know, and it was all like, oh, my goodness. And even, and you talk about bias, you know, I read the Wall Street Journal every day, and it's like they, when they have a story about one thing, then they have a story about Hillary, and they say, when she brings in money, they say her haul. You know, the words they use make it kind of negative. You can see they're making little
jabs. What words do they use on her, about her?
When she took in money, it was a haul. It wasn't
a donation.
You know, it wasn't that she brought in donations. It was Hillary's haul, you know. And when Obama makes money, it's, oh, he got some donations or whatever. They get slanted in the verbiage they use. And it's just so, you know, even like in the news nowadays, you flick through the channels and they all got the same stories almost in the same order. If I owned a television station, I would say, look at Darfur. People are dying right now today. Let's look at this. Let's put it in people's face and say, do something about this. But no, let's talk about Brett Favre and everything else. So it's all, you know, the news is doing a disservice to everyone.
Okay, thank you for that call. And talking about language, Steve Powers, that's something you say we need to be looking carefully at when we're watching television news, right?
Absolutely, because again, we tend not to listen all that carefully, because when a TV news show distorts the truth by altering or changing a fact, maybe even through a recreation that you're watching of something that's supposed to have happened and didn't. You tend not to listen to the words that are being used to describe different things, and I think a very important lesson is for people to listen to the script that's being read as they watch the news, because there are nuances in there. There are subtle statements being made that you have to listen to walk away with the truth.
You know, in the end of your book with the tips section about how to watch TV news, you have a part that I love. You have a tip that sort of says we should get over ourselves and not feel like we have to have opinions about everything, because I guess that's driving the need to watch these news shows. We pick up a minute and a half piece on global warming, and then we feel like we need to have an opinion. And you suggest that we should just say, you know, if someone asks us, what do we think about, you know, pick an issue, and instead of offering up a half-baked opinion, you say we should just say, I have no opinion on this stance, since I know practically nothing about it.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
I'll tell you how that came about. I used to, this is a confession, I used to do I did a number of talk shows in New York, and when I stopped doing them and I got into television, and later when I taught, I realized what a pleasure it was not to have an opinion about everything every day, because you have to arm yourself, because some caller is going to ask you, what's your opinion of this, what's your opinion of that? And I felt it was a delight not to have an opinion, because, you know, we go through life with just observing things, and I think it's very healthy to absorb and being able to observe on your own without getting an opinion in the way. You don't need to read every op-ed page opinion of every columnist to tell you what to think. You will draw your own conclusions, and you will know what to think just by allowing yourself to be open to the facts and the truth, absorbing it, and ultimately you'll come away with an idea of what the truth is and know what's going on. And you don't need a hard-pressed opinion about everything and everyone.
Have you actually said that? You know, I have no opinion since I know nothing about this.
Have I said that?
Yeah.
After I got off the radio, I did.
Once the moment had passed.
Exactly.
I think I might try that. It might be liberating. But the problem is, you know, in our culture, you say that, you know, you're at a dinner party and people think you don't care. They think you're uninformed. It's a hard nut to crack.
Yeah. Well, it is. And on the other hand, most of the time we talk about stuff we don't know anything about, you know, because you can't know everything about everything. You can't know everything about the Middle East and Bosnia, Herzegovina, and so on and so forth. You can't. It's impossible to do. So you get you have a smattering of this, a smattering of that, and based on that, you're spouting opinions. And okay, you know, sure, you can do that, but it's sort of like listening to sports radio, you know, who's more important, the catcher or the pitcher in this stuff, and it's just not important at all.
Well, we've only got about 30 seconds to go here. Do you have any quick ideas for handling children and teaching them to watch the news?
Yeah, I do, and that is, besides using How to Watch TV News as a manual, try to explain to children how the media works. I'm not only talking about television, I'm talking about radio, I'm talking about books, I'm talking about magazines, so that they understand that what they're reading is just not the unbridled truth, that it's filtered, and that they have to see and learn things for themselves and come to their own conclusion.
So teach them about it early.
Yes.
Well, Steve Powers, thanks so much for being with us. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure to be here, Veronica.
Steve Powers, Emmy Award-winning journalist and co-author of the book How to Watch the TV News. Thank you to Sarah Carroll for our on-air production and to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour. I'm Veronica Rickert here on the Ideas Network.